The bulletin says that my sermon today is titled To the Young and to the Old. But I cut off the old. Sorry about that. Because Michael wants to say some things about the Leadership Training for Christ convention that was held last weekend. And so I needed to cut my sermon short, and I thought, well, Lord willing, we'll address the older people at some other time. But I'd like to just say to the young in the congregation, and who are the young? I'll let you determine whether that includes you or not. It would definitely include those who went down to the convention and those who couldn't make it. But there's eight things I'd like to say to you this morning. And the first one is this. Make the book of Proverbs your dear friend. Make the book of Proverbs your dear friend. And it, actually the Holy Spirit through the book of Proverbs, exhorts you to listen to what it has to say. Let me just give you some samplings here. When you open up the book of Proverbs and you read the first nine chapters, that's just getting you set up to receive the Proverbs that begin at chapter 10, verse 1. So it must be that hearing the Proverbs of Solomon are exceedingly important enough that the Holy Spirit had Solomon write introductory material to the book of Proverbs that takes up that much space. And let me just give you a little sampling of what he said there. In chapter 1, verses 4 and 5, he said this, that the book of Proverbs is given to us to give prudence to the simple, to the young man, knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase learning, and a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. Verses 8 and 9. My son, hear the instruction of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother. So this is David, then speaking to Solomon, and then Solomon is speaking to his son, probably primarily Rehoboam, but as well as his other children. For they will be a graceful ornament on your head and chains about your neck. So listen to what's written here. It'll beautify your life. Chapter 3. Turn over to chapter 3 now. Verses 1 and 2. Proverbs 3, 1 and 2. My son, do not forget my law, but let your heart keep my commands. Why? For length of days and long life and peace they will add to you. That same chapter, chapter 3, 21 through 24. My son, let them, the things that he's teaching in the book of Proverbs, not depart from your eyes. And I would recommend, you may have heard me say this before, that you read a chapter in Proverbs every day that corresponds to the day of the month. So in other words, go home today and read Proverbs 28. Tomorrow, Proverbs 29. Do that every month for the rest of your life. And watch what happens to your wisdom. Anyways, my son, let them not depart from your eyes. Keep sound wisdom and discretion, so they will be life to your soul and grace to your neck. Like a chain of gold will be a chain of grace around your life. Then you will walk safely in your way, and your foot will not stumble. When you lie down, you will not be afraid. Yes, you will lie down, and your sleep will be sweet. Chapter 4, the first seven verses here. And I could just read all nine chapters to you, but why do I include this passage and not that one? Well, you read it and you'll see why I have difficulty figuring out which ones to read to you, but listen to this one, okay? This is really important. Verse 1 of chapter 4. Hear, my children, the instruction of a father, and give attention to no understanding. For I give you good doctrine. Do not forsake my law. When I was my father's son, David, tender and only one in the sight of my mother, Bathsheba, he also taught me and said to me, now here's what David taught Solomon. And this is why when God appeared to Solomon and says, what do you want? I'll give it to you. And he said, I need discernment. I need understanding. I need wisdom. It's because this is what he learned from his father. Okay, here's what his dad told him. Let your heart retain my words. Keep my commands and live. Get wisdom. Get understanding. Do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her, and she will preserve you. Love her, and she will keep you. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom, and in all you're getting, get understanding, which is what wisdom is. And that's why, just based upon those passages, I would say you should make the book of Proverbs your dear friend. In fact, can I just give one more? Chapter 7, verse 4, kind of says it better than saying as a dear friend. Listen to this, Proverbs 7, 4. Say to wisdom, you are my sister, and call understanding your nearest kin or relative. Okay, so that was number one. Make the book of Proverbs your dear friend. Number two, be like the weasel, badger, wolverine, rattlesnake, and skunk. Because they so concentrate on their enemy that they forget their own size and the size of their enemy, and they win. And if you're not sure about that, just, well, we got plenty of skunks around here, so try and tangle with a skunk and you'll see what I mean. Even if you're 5 years old, you're bigger than a skunk. Okay? So my point from this here is not just to let your enemies have it. My point is, don't take any regard to your size, to your youth, or anything like that. And don't let the size of whatever faces you frighten you either. You live by the wisdom from the book of Proverbs and you'll do well. Number three, be like David. As a youth, as a young shepherd, the only thing he knew was that a lion and a bear attacked one of his lambs or sheep, and that was the end of that predator. He so loved the sheep and the lambs that he had no fear. And a little bit later, he goes to one of Israel's wars, probably his first experience with war, and there's this big dude, almost 10 feet tall, who is defying God and mocking God's armies. And with David, that's it. He needs to be eliminated. So we did it. And Goliath, well, you know how he's gone down in history, really hard, with a rock thrown through his forehead. So be like David, who was valiant by means of faith. Number four, be like the boy who fed thousands of people from the book you've been studying from January, the young people in LTC, from January to just this month, the book of John. So you could probably get up, some of the young people who went through LTC, and talk about John 6 better than what I could right now. But just remember what you studied. And everyone else here in the congregation, remember this, John 6. In John 6, there are thousands of people following Jesus, and he wants to feed them. And the disciples don't know what to do. There's thousands of people here, and watch what happens in verse 8. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon, Peter's brother, said to him, "There's a lad here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. But what are they among so many?" Then Jesus said, "Make the people sit down." There was much grass in the place, so the men sat down in number about 5,000. And Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed them to the disciples, and the disciples to those sitting down, and likewise of the fish, as much as they wanted. And everyone ate to the full, and there were more leftovers than what Jesus started with when he got those 5 loaves and 2 fish from that boy. We don't even know the kid's name. But he brought his lunch and gave it to Jesus, and he did wonderful things with it. Number five, be aware that skeptics want to destroy your faith. What I'm going to mention right here, I've already had in the bulletin. I'm getting this information from a woman by the name of Natasha Crane. And I thought that what she had was really good. Here are five people, five skeptics who want to destroy your faith, young people. First one is this, the science thumper. That's the one who wants to make you believe that you don't have enough scientific expertise to understand that belief in God is unnecessary and silly. In other words, if you know science, you don't need God. That's a very common thought today in many people in the scientific community. But it's not true. Science, actual true science and belief in God go hand in hand because God is the creator of nature that science studies. So be aware that that's going to happen. Right now you may not be in that environment, but when you get higher up into school, especially when you leave and go out on your own and just get into the world, there's going to be a lot of pressure in that regard. And that will even increase depending upon what employment or job you seek to have. Number two is the indoctrination informer. The indoctrination informer. This person is informing you that the only reason you believe in Jesus or the Bible or anything like that is because your parents made you believe that. They indoctrinated you. It's your parents' faith and not yours. So be aware of that one. Number three would be the miracle mocker. They want to make you feel gullible for believing in miracles which are contrary to the laws of nature. And you know what? They are. That's the point of a miracle. Look at the miracles of Jesus. Of course, that's what they really want to tear down, are the miracles of Jesus or anything you find written in the Bible. Let's take his walking on water. Naturally, scientifically, you can't walk on water. And when he walked on water, it was during a storm, so it's not like it were calm seas. There were waves being tossed about. And I don't think he was just walking through the waves. I think he was walking up and down them. Well, if there is a God, and if he is that God who came down and lived here among us, should he be able to suspend the laws of nature if he wants to, or manipulate them, or do whatever? Well, yes. Of course. If he's the one who made the laws of nature, he can twist them when he wants to or leave them be or whatever. All right, so number four is the self-sufficient scoffer. The self-sufficient scoffer. This is the one who boasts that he doesn't need God and he implies that you're weak and you're inferior if you think you do need God. So be aware of that one. And then the fifth one is the tolerance enforcer. The tolerance enforcer. This person is going to make you think that you're unloving and even hateful if you do not endorse every form of deviant behavior that's out there. And there's a lot of that going on today. Okay? So you don't be ugly or snobbish about it or anything like that, but you just live by what the Bible says and you'll be walking with the truth. Okay, back to my major points now. Now it's number six. And here I'd like you to turn to the book of Ecclesiastes, because I have a lot to give you from Ecclesiastes. And the thing that I want to show you from Ecclesiastes is to think about the days of your life. Think about the days of your life. In chapter 1, he begins with a question. Verse 3, that he does not answer until he gets to the very end of the book. In chapter 1, verse 3, he asks this, "What profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun?" You know, a lot of people have asked that question. They've gone through life, and now they've come to the end. Maybe they have some dreaded disease or whatever, and they've thought to themselves, what was my life all about? Okay, well, he deals with that question. So, you can divide Ecclesiastes up into two parts. Chapter 1, verse 1, through chapter 11, verse 6. 1:1 through 11:6. He shows how to live well. How to live well. Then the last part, and that's what I want you to turn to now, and this is the part I want to show you. Chapter 7, 11 through 12, 14. 11:7 through 12:14. How to die well. Okay, so here's some samplings from that. Chapter 11, verses 7 and 8. There are days of light and darkness coming. Truly the light is sweet, and it is pleasant for the eyes to behold the sun. But if a man lives many years and rejoices in them all, yet let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. All this coming is vanity. Okay, so verse 7 he says, there are some good years. Verse 8, here's your young years, here's your old years, and then here's just the time of vanity. Verses 9 through 10. Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Now listen to this. He says, walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes. What? Did I just read that in the Bible? Yes. Solomon just said, walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes. Doesn't the Bible usually speak against that? Yes. But I'm not done reading the verse. He then says, but know that for all these, if you walk according to the way of your heart and you walk according to the way of your eyes, know this, God will bring you into judgment. Therefore, remove sorrow from your heart and put away evil from your flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity. Okay, so, I mean, if you don't want to listen to everything I'm saying, Solomon says, then, you know, go ahead and ignore it. Walk in the ways that you want to do. But just remember, someday you're going to meet God and you're going to have to talk to Him about it. So instead, why not just remove sorrow from your heart? Don't give yourself to sin and everything that comes from it, but remember your Creator. That's what he's teaching. Okay, chapter 12, verses 1 through 7 speaks about days of decline. And I'm not going to read all those verses. I'll just read verse 1. Chapter 12, verse 7. Remember now your Creator in the days of your youth. Before the difficult days come and the years draw near when you say, I have no pleasure in them. Remember your Creator now while you are young. And here's one reason why. I can say after 39 years of preaching that I have baptized very few people over the age of 40. I've baptized some in their 80s, if you can believe that, but that, not very many. Four, from what I can remember. Most people turn to Christ in their teens, 20s, and some in their 30s. Obviously not everyone, but that's the vast majority. So the time to do that is now. And that's because we get set in our ways, and even God, we won't even listen to God and let Him change us. If you're not sure how young it is when you get set in your ways, well, just think about a 5-year-old kid, and let's say mom is usually there to take care of breakfast, and one morning, mom's not there, but dad is. And dad's going to do certain things just the way he would do them, and what does the kid say? That's not the way mom does it. That kid's already set in his ways. He's only 5 years old. Man, it happens fast. Probably even younger than that. But Solomon went on to say there that, you know, soon life gets consumed with difficulties. So much so that when you get old enough in life, you're ready for life to be over. I remember the first time someone, an older person, actually asked me to pray for them to die. And I was like, what? You got to be kidding me. You want to die? But when you start getting enough problems and all the things that he lists there, he states it all poetically. He describes gray hair, for example, like when the almond tree blossoms, and he talks about the grasshopper can't jump anymore, referring to the strength of your legs. And it's kind of interesting to go through what he said there in verses 1 through 7. But it does get that way, and it gets to the point where Solomon said here at the end of verse 1, you have no pleasure in them. It just those difficult days come, and it's like Virginia Herndon. If any of you remember her, she lived to be 99. And she told me, and I think Lynn told me too, who was taking care of her, that she'd wake up in the morning and say, "Am I still here?" That's how difficult life was for her. To get dressed took an hour and a half, if I remember right. Does that sound close, Lynn? Something like that. An hour and a half to get dressed? Hard to imagine, but that's what happens. So anyways, skipping all those verses, going down to verse 13, Solomon finally answers this question that he began the book with in chapter 1, verse 3. And he's shown you how to live well, how to die well, and then he says this, "Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Everything that I've been talking about, it all comes down to this. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil." So just remember, you're going to meet God one day. Okay, number 7. Respect older people. In 1 Timothy chapter 5, as Timothy was the preacher for the Ephesian congregation, he's going to be dealing with people in all age groups. And so he said this to him in chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. "Do not rebuke an older man, but exhort him as a father. Younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, younger women as sisters, with all purity." In other words, be respectful. The law of Moses taught in the book of Leviticus that you should rise up before the gray-headed. An older person walks into the room, stand up for them. It's a way of showing respect. Are they ever irritable? Yeah, sometimes they are. Love and respect them anyway. Yes, they need to be Christ-like, and Paul told them how to treat you, and they need to follow those instructions. But I have often heard older people, as they watch younger people of all ages, including into adulthood, young adults, I've heard them say this, "I wish I knew then," now you all are, the older people are finishing it for me, "what I know now." How many of you, if you could raise your hand and then hold them up, how many of you either have said that before or you mouthed it with me right now when I said it? Everybody, keep your hands up, and all those who are young, just look around. Look at all these hands. Okay, you can put them down. That's something to think about. So when I would hear people say that, I thought to myself, well, what is it that you know now that you wished you knew then? So I asked them. And they were always glad to tell me. They were glad I asked, and they told me. So young people, if you ever hear someone say that, just say, well, what is it that you know now that you wish you knew when you were my age? And note what they say. Some of them have had some experiences, and they've learned from them. Some of them haven't learned from their experiences. You know, they're just like anyone. Someone said this. I just read this week. "Listen to your elders, not because they're always right, but they have more experience of being wrong." And so, they want to, they don't want you to make the same mistakes. I don't want you to make mistakes I've made. And that's some of why I've said this here today. Finally, the last thing that I want to say is this. Make Jesus your Lord. You're going to be tempted in life to make a lot of different things or a lot of different people the Lord of your life. Now, I'm going to tell you what, every single one of them or every single thing, whatever it is, or who it is, at some point will let you down. No matter how good of a thing it is or how good of a person he or she is, it just is going to happen. So build your life on the Lord Jesus Christ. Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 11, that there is no other foundation than that which can be laid, or than that which is already laid, and that's Jesus Christ. 1 Corinthians 3:11. Make Jesus the Lord of your heart, of your life, everything. He will never let you down. He'll always be there for you. Always. Always, through everything in life. When the things are going really good and you're tempted to forget about Him, He's there. Things are bad and you're having difficulties and maybe you've forgotten about Him, but He's still there. And he's waiting for you. And he wants you to follow him. But please, don't become a Christian just because other young people are doing it. You do it because you're ready. You do it because you believe that if, at this point in your life, that if you were to die, you would not be saved. That you'd go to hell. And you don't want that. You want to be saved. And he will save you. If anyone, young or old, has that need today, come forward now as we stand and sing.